Come take my hand and see the world around you. The time is right, just let the light surround you. And step by step, you feel it coming alive. The feeling deep down inside, and you've got nothing to hide. To reach the top, you've gotta keep on moving. Don't let it stop, just gotta keep on moving. I know you're doing your best, you're stepping up from the rest. Just keep on passing the test.
Happy Tuesday to you. If it is Tuesday, it is time once again to get powered up and energized with Untapped Potential right here on TDN Radio. So again, it is a pleasure to be with you. I am Dr. Simone, and it is a pleasure to be with you for another episode of Untapped Potential on TDN Radio. If you're a regular listener, we want to thank you for your support, and you would already know that this is where we stop by each and every week to get powered up and energized for the week ahead and to remind ourselves of the important life goals that we have set out for ourselves. So we are so happy that you're joining us here on TDN Radio for Untapped Potential. We look forward to being in your company each and every week. We always like to start the program on a note of gratitude. So what are you grateful for today? As for me, I am grateful that we enjoyed a fantastic vacation. It is summertime down here in Georgia already. And so we went off to the Bahamas last week for a 5-night vacation, which was spectacular. If you have an opportunity to do so, I would highly recommend at least Atlantis in the Bahamas, especially if you have children at home who enjoy a water park, enjoy some great cuisine, and just some more much needed family time. So again, I am grateful for every blessing that we receive in this life. And again, if you cannot find a reason to be grateful, just remember you woke up this morning. So that is a great place to start. So we have another packed program for you today. Today, our interview is going to be a conversation we had with the Caribbean Agriculture Network. So this is an agency which is headed by attorney at law, Mr. Gabriel Christian. One of the founding members as well is Dr. Davidson Lloyd, as well as Mr. Errol Emmanuel. So they stopped by and we had a very important conversation regarding the cocoa industry in Dominica. So from its inception to the reason it declined, to now we are revamping the cocoa industry in Dominica to create economic opportunities for so many who need those opportunities in Dominica. So we had this conversation last week, and I thought we could have a few weeks ago actually, and I thought we could have it repeated here on Untapped Potential. It will be a two-part series. So the first half of the program we'll have today, and the second half we will have next week. So again, thank you for joining us. It is always great to be here with you. And of course, you want to stay tuned to the end of the program for our tip of the week, as well as everything that we are working on to advance the lives of Dominican and Caribbean people at home and abroad. So as we get started today, let us enjoy this number from Buju Banton, a song entitled "It Is Not an Easy Road," and it is certainly not. If you're working on important goals, you know how difficult it can be to achieve those and to remain consistent. So let's enjoy this number from Buju Banton, "It's Not an Easy Road," and then we will go straight into our pre-recorded interview regarding the cocoa industry in Dominica. Stay tuned.
I made it to the corner with a making, and that's where I make the thing. I've been here for sure, don't worry. smile. I make up my mind just to have more mile. Oh God, I've got to, because I know that it's not an easy road. I mean, it's the glamour and the guitar, so they think I better roast me, say, who feels it knows? Ooh, Lord, help me sustain these blows. What's more, it's not an easy road.
Started the conversation because thank you Gabe and Dave for sending the information that you did. We have to take a look at the documentary film that you guys did, and if you've not had an opportunity to see that film, which kind of documents what this project is, I would encourage you at the end of the program to head on over to pushpast10.com, pushpast10.com for all the information. And this is where I thought we could get started. You know, I really want us to focus on the current project that we're here to discuss this evening, but we always have to consider our history, right? So what we are finding out, which I didn't know, is that even before Banana, cocoa production was big business in Dominica. So Dave, let me come over to you as we talk a little bit about the history of cocoa production. And then Gabe, I want to come back to you as well to talk about what you started talking about in 2008. The Chocolate de la Dominique was also established in 2008. So Errol and Dave, let's talk about the history of cocoa production and what led to the demise. Why was it not pursued further than it went in the beginning?
Yes, Simone, thanks. Okay. Yeah, cocoa, yes, in fact, that's correct, that cocoa was actually, you know, big business before bananas. Mm-hmm. And bananas initially came in as a shade crop for cocoa, right? Because cocoa is it's naturally an understory crop, where cocoa originates in Central America and so on. You would find it would occur naturally under the forest, and cocoa loves shade. So initially so you're going back way back. I mean, some of the plantations you would read from Lennox Honey Church, there were cocoa plantations. Cocoa and coffee were grown a lot here in Dominica. Places like Soufrière and so on, some of the old areas for drying and processing cocoa, you know, you could find. But the estates would have, a lot of them would be located in, you know, areas that were, you know, naturally shaded, okay, in the valleys and so on. This would be the areas selected for growing cocoa. And we were colonies of Europe, the British and the French. And the British in particular, you know, sought to develop agriculture. Was really the big business worldwide, whether it's sugarcane and so on. That's really was the currency of the day. So they invested in research. So you had the formation of the Imperial College for Tropical Agriculture in Trinidad. Incidentally, today, the Cocoa Research Center in Trinidad, which is now 93 years old, it was opened in 1930, they had their annual symposium today, where it runs from today and tomorrow. So that history is rich. And the demise came about, the price and demand for cocoa seem to have dropped over time. And bananas, you know, already took prominence. So you would find cocoa trees were being cut down to plant bananas at one point in time. So from the banana boom, really, cocoa kind of waned, and production and exports and so on were really, you know, nothing to shout about. And even now, but what happened over that time was the exchange of planted material and the agricultural entities, or what should I say, the British government, so to speak, invested in each island basically with their propagation centers, and there was a lot of exchange of planting material from Trinidad in terms of cocoa. Well, a lot of what we had came initially from Trinidad, but it seems there's some records that we found of somewhere around 1922, and the botanic gardens have their very good detailed records of the activities that went on at the botanic gardens at the National Archives. Recently, there was some information shared with me by my colleague, Mr. Arlington James, concerning some research work that was going on with cocoa very, very long time ago in terms of breeding. So, and that knowledge has sort of been there with regards to the types of cocoa that was available. And I think the old agricultural workers and basically the citizens had a good handle of that. And they did a lot of preparatory work for the farmers, basically. So a farmer would get cocoa plants, but there would be a mixture of different varieties, because there's knowledge in terms of cocoa, you have different types. And apart from the color of the pod and the size of the bean and so on, there are cocoa trees or cocoa cultivars that can pollinate themselves, right? And there are those that require cross-pollination, so pollen have to come from another tree. So all these details are very important in terms of productivity of a cocoa field.
Mm-hmm. And Dave, let me say we will get into that as well as we continue with the conversation, because I found the work that Candid fascinating. So I want us to explore that in more detail. But let's just go over to Errol for his thoughts. Dave, thank you very much for that. Let's go over to Errol for his thoughts. And then Gabriel, when I come back to you, we're going to talk about the project in 2008, and then we're going to jump right into CAN being established from 2014. What was the vision? What was the concept at the time? How we got into the cocoa production project? So, Errol, let me hear your thoughts on the history of cocoa in Dominica.
The history of cocoa, like they said, there should be their records going back to the early 19th century. And in our recent work, trying to get to old farms that people told us about that exist in estates, and we were able to discover one or two old estates, which tells us that these estates took cocoa very seriously. They had a system of pulling in and pulling out to dry, and their fermentation system, and it just speaks of how organized that they were. I remember a specific farming cottage. You will hear about Wakotlet in the Soufriere area. Wakotlet is a cocoa estate that existed. The Melville area, if you speak to the elderly folks in the Maribor area, they will tell you that they actually had a drying facility and processing just before the bridge in that area where you see the old ruined buildings on the right side going to the airport. That was actually existing. And among the farmers that you will speak to will tell you that with the coming into being of bananas, that a lot of cocoa trees were cut down because banana was the new crop on the block, and it was a fast cash crop. It was a crop that you could actually sell year-round and make money, and so farmers figured it was an option. As they mentioned, the price was also an issue. And then in Africa, they expanded their cocoa cultivation and produced what was called as mass cocoa. And so our cocoa, which was fine flavor and was the production declined, it affected us at that point. But as we speak presently, the question of fine flavor cocoa, which is probably 5% of the market, but the value and the price of fine flavor cocoa today is much more than the mass cocoa. So yes, the history have taught us that it was a crop. It was more or less an estate crop, but you had smaller farmers producing and doing their own fermentation. Farmers would use their crocus bags to do their fermentation because they didn't have the money to invest in large drying and fermenting facilities. And now what we've learned and what we are now learning, it kind of brings us at the crossroads where our view on the cocoa industry is going to have to change dramatically. It has to be different. It has to be science-driven. And so the history has taught us certain things, but we are here today. I recall, just to mention, Mr. Derek Zamo, who worked with the Ministry of Agriculture. In doing that project, Dave and I spent about 5 hours at his home. Because he has so much, like I said earlier in my opening remarks, there's so much knowledge in this man about cocoa and tree crops. And he actually guided us as to where to go to look for all types. And it tells you how much value we have in our human resource here. But we have to reach it.
Yes, yes. Thank you for that. So, Gabriel, let me come over to you. So the attempt in 2008, and why did that not continue, as well as tell us more about the Caribbean Agriculture Network, how it came about, and why the focus on cocoa from the Caribbean Agricultural Network?
Very, very, very good question, Simone. So the CAN idea really has its genesis in the Dominica Diaspora Summit of December 7th, 2001, a few months after 9/11 took place. We planned to do it at the World Trade Center, and we had then Agriculture Minister, I believe, Vince Henderson there with us, and we had an Education Minister by the name of Roosevelt Skerrin. We had Edmund Tavernier from Rutgers University, who had taught alongside me in grammar school, and we had about 1,000 Dominicans. That's where, you know, a lot of reconnections took place. That's where, you know, people like Matt Peltier was there. Thompson was one of the organizers. He was the treasurer of the Dominican Academy. So the whole idea was for Dominicans to come together at home and abroad and to meet and not look at our development mission as being externally orchestrated, but being a product of our own native intelligence, our own self-love, our own self-respect, and our own ability to can do. And that's where can, you know what I mean? You'll understand the kind of concept. So yes, you had agriculturists like Dr. Clayton Shillingford, who worked at DuPont Labs, who'd gone to the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign, who used to be the director of research at the Jamaica Banana Board. You had people like Dr. Dave Shillingford, who went to Cornell, who started off at the Imperial College of Tropical Agriculture in Trinidad that Brother Dave referenced, right? All these people were involved. Now, they were on the older side of things, no disrespect in way of age, but they were dynamic. Then we thought, let's do a project, why cocoa? Because cocoa, of all the tropical products, is a multi-billion dollar industry. But it's been historically dominated by Cadbury's in England, Hershey's in the United States, all working off, you know, cocoa from the Caribbean, from Latin America, from Africa. So the idea was to bring something from conceptualization to actualization. But what Dave and Errol will tell you, our two dearly beloved brothers, is that we have cocoa in Dominica, but we do not have a cocoa industry, you see. So this was conceived of as a pilot project to say, on the 30th anniversary of our independence, here, folks, this is what we can do. If we focus on things that will carry us through as opposed to fly by night and flash bang whiz without any substantiality, we can really be able to create a world-class industry. Because what Dave said to you is, we have Trinitario and Criollo. And Dave mentioned, and Errol will substantiate, that's what you call fine flavor. So cocoa originated in this region of the world and was taken by the colonizers to Africa and other places. But we are in the historically, we're in the historic foundational base of cocoa in this area. You know, the gentleman who got lost at sea ended up in Colombia. It's because that's where the currents go. You know, Colombia, the isthmus of Central America to the islands, the canoes with the native people would move up and down. So when Columbus came to Dominica, there's already cocoa in Dominica. And what happened was, because of the Imperial College of Tropical Agriculture in Trinidad, really studying the bean, we also had a degree of specialization and a degree of focus on fine flavor. That's why in the Layu Valley, where we built this Alwyn's property, you had Cocoa Center. The Cocoa Center was in the Lyre Valley, right? And so the idea was to sort of go back to our roots, right? Because that's where our mother was born. She was born at Cocoa Center. Our dad was a soil conservation officer planting bamboo so that you wouldn't have slippage on the sides of the valley because of soil erosion and that type of thing. So we didn't have the internal capacity to have continuity. So it was a what you call demonstrative project, right? And then, of course, Can came about because Captain Frankie Town in the Virgin Islands always buying stuff, taking some by plane, some by boat, to feed the local markets in the Virgin Islands. Then Errol and I had that relationship. And then Errol knew Dr. Dave. You see how it's happening? It's all relationship capital. And then Can was formed. And one of the first things Can did as Can was not the chocolate project, but was the project with Dr. Marcus Garvey, Dr. Julius Garvey, the last son on earth of Marcus Garvey. He gave us about 400 breadfruit plants. And we brought breadfruit to Dominica. And some of that is now being used to make breadfruit chips by Adrian Banners. Right? And because it's a new kind of breadfruit where you can stand on the ground and pick it with your hands. You don't have to use the long fourchette. Is it fourchette, Dave? Errol, the long, you know, Simone, your partner is better than mine. Yeah. My thing is a long stick. And what would happen if you burst this off?
Kali.
Kali. Indeed. Indeed. So the second project of Chocolat de Lot Dominique was with Criollo and Trinitario, but we chose bean that had those tendencies or that background with Eric Reed and Chris Wareed. Chris Wareed is from the Dominican Republic. Eric is from Panama with Westinian heritage, and they ran a chocolate factory in Maryland, the only one of its kind. So they came to Dominica. They taught us the technique of fermentation. Errol's there with us at Batley. And, you know, cocoa can be bitter. But when we did it, what happened with the cocoa's taste, Brother Errol? Can you tell our Sister Matthew?
The bitterness disappeared because of the fermentation and the drying technique that was used.
We just used to, Errol, thank you very much. We just used to go ahead and have his cocoa and just go and use it. But he taught us how to ferment. And then we brought the bean here to Maryland. And then we produced the second set of bars, and we donated all of that because guess what happened? Tropical Storm Erica happened. Okay. And so we donated all of that to rebuild Dominica. So what we have is a network that is CAN, but CAN is also partnered with the Rebuild Dominica organization, which is a 501c3, which is set up in 2015. And then we partnered with the University of Maryland and brought the food scientists down with Brother Dave, Brother Errol, to teach food science, but always thinking, how do we get back to cocoa? And then I'll turn over to Brother Dave and Brother Errol, because they were the ones who initiated the link with Global Environment Fund of Sister, with Sister Agnes Esprit, and they will give more detail on that.
Yeah. Yeah, and we can already see the importance of collaboration in all of this, building the right networks and involving the right people in a project such as this. So I want to come over to you, David and Errol, so we can actually talk about this project and what it involved, because there was some high science and research involved using the GPS to track the cocoa and all that great information. So just kind of walk us through what the actual project involved.
Okay, well, there was a call from the GEF as the Global Environment Facility Small Grants Program for under, it was the operational phase 6. I think it started somewhere in 2017, maybe before Maria. And one of the themes of that call was something dealing with ecological and sustainability and so on. And we thought that cocoa could be a good fit, because cocoa, you know, doesn't have a very high fertilizer requirement. It's a crop that produces a lot of leaves, that so the recycling for cocoa, and you know, we thought it fit into that well, and we could develop a project that could meet the requirements that Jeff was trying to push, and also it could meet some of our objectives in terms of doing something for cocoa, something positive and something that could benefit the country. And so we designed we had to first produce a concept note. So that concept note was drafted and we looked at it and so on and submitted it and it was approved. And we developed now the full project. So now that actually started now after Maria, because there was a hiatus for Maria. Everything is done and so on. So in 2018, now, because almost all the cocoa in Dominica was destroyed, so planting material became an issue. Now, we were aware that there was some work done before by the University of the West Indies with support of the European Union banana accompanying measures, what they call the BAM project. And they had done some work to characterize some of the cocoa in Dominica. So we went to, we had the report, we found the report, and we were trying to find the farms. We got a few of the farms, but they tagged the farms with some plastic tags, and all these were lost. So we could not find, you know, where this cocoa was. We could see some of the traits that they found were pretty good and so on. So, but these plots were not GPS tags, so you could locate them, and the tags that were on them were lost, so we could not, you know, we tried. Actually, they brought us to a farm, era, remember, they brought us to a farm somewhere in the cottage area, and we tried, we looked, we couldn't find any tags, anything. So we decide, well, boy, we need to start from scratch, because we want to know what we're propagating. We want to know what it is. We want to find out the best of what we have in Dominica that we would propagate and share and so on. And the only way to do that was to go back to the drawing board, collect samples, and have them use DNA fingerprinting technique to find out the constituents of this material, different types of cocoa that we had. And as Errol said, one of the points was to gather intel. And Mr. Derek Zamo, God bless him, was very, very helpful in terms of locating some of the farms. He has such, we were so impressed. Now, Mr. Zamo is someone who is a family friend. He's from Collioure, and my daddy and my dad grew up together and everything. But I always know he's in agriculture, and everything and so on. But that sitting down with him was so helpful. I just, you know, you just couldn't imagine. I, you know, talking about it now making me shiver a bit, you know. He knows, he could recall all the names of the different cocoa cultivars. Tell you GS29, and you know this one is self-pollinating. This one is, I have to go to research to find out these things. You know, you go on the International Cocoa Organization website and you get that detail there, but he was just speaking them from his head. He could recall all those details, and he was able to tell us where we could find, you know, the good material, and also there's a young gentleman. He's on the video as well. He's the one who did the propagation training. Mm-hmm. Very valuable as well, Mr. Ferrara, Ivan Ferrara. Shout him out. He was helpful because he was also doing propagation on his own, and he knew where some clones were. So a combination of that intel, we found out and we made the contact with the lab in Trinidad. They were willing to work with us, and we collected the samples. We sent two batches, and there you go. The first one we got, man, it was like bingo, you know. Because cocoa has, although Brother Gabriel spoke about the Trinitario and Criollo, and really the Criollo content, Trinitario is really a mixture of Forastero, which is a wild type of cocoa, more hardy type. It's a mixture of Criollo, well, Forastero and Criollo to make Trinitario. And because that cross seemed to have happened in Trinidad, it is given that name, Trinitario. Most of our cultivars are Trinitario, but you have different amounts of Criollo in them, the ratio of Criollo, you know, and the higher the Criollo content is, the, you know, the better the flavor, the more fine flavor cocoa, that's the higher.
Yeah, because that is what I was going to say to our audience, Dave, that we're talking about which type of cocoa makes for the finest cocoa, which is now in high demand. So what this boils down to, the conversation we're having, is how do we feed the need of the high demand for high quality chocolate and cocoa products that is now in the world. So we're seeing a high demand for those products, and Dominica has a distinct advantage because through genetic testing done in Trinidad, we were able to identify the genetic code, the brand of cocoa that makes the finest chocolate and the finest cocoa products. So this is why this project is so exciting, because we have what it takes to meet that demand. And as the conversation goes along, we want to talk about the markets and the agro-processing that will be needed for all of this. But let me hand it over to Errol as well so he can make a contribution. Oh, I think we just lost him. Oh, my. Errol, coming back if you can. So, Dave, I guess we'll stay with you for now. Let's talk more about what happened after we were able to genetically identify the brands of cocoa that we had in Dominica. And we got the great news that we have the cocoa in Dominica that makes the finest cocoa products and the finest chocolate products. So let's take it from there and what happened back in Dominica.
Okay, so that was one aspect to the project, to be definitive and to find out what we had, because the whole goal was to propagate and to get people planting. It was a small project, $44,000 over 2 to 3 years, you know. So once we found what we had and we were able to clone those plants and prepare planting material, because cocoa, there's something that's important here. in terms of the cross-pollination that you have. I mean, well, we're going to break it down. Basically, in a family, you have a mother, father, and they're going to have children, but not all the children don't look exactly like the mother and the father. It's a combination of them, and your sisters and brothers don't exactly look, except maybe you are identical twin or something. But so you're going to have that cross that, you know, that happening. So Coco does not remain true to type if you leave it to cross on its own. You might get something different. That something different might be good, it could be bad, right? In terms of quality, right? Of cocoa in terms of fine flavor and so on. So it's important, conservation of what we have is very, very key. Now, if you don't even know what you have, how can you conserve it? You know, you don't know what you have. So the first thing is to be definitive about what you have, then you take steps to conserve. So we sought to establish plots around the island that would be a source of planting material and also to demonstrate best practice in cocoa production. All right? So we had four of them. We had in the Kalinago territory, two in the Marigot area, one in Warner. Actually, five. We eventually have one in Salisbury as well later on. So, we try to work with these farmers in terms of doing things that are a bit unconventional. So, the producing cassava and and other root crops with cocoa wasn't really a common thing per se, right? You more find with bananas and so on. So we sort of, and in a way, looking at the farmer's budget, our experience with bananas and agriculture generally, will tell you that you can't wait for the cocoa. You need things in between. Cash flow has to keep rolling. So that's in mind. And we also add on the beekeeping component to also look to that, broadening the farmer's income stream. So it's basically, we try to as we said, we wanted to develop and recommend sustainable, you know, options for cocoa production in Dominica.
Yes, thank you. So, Errol, let me come back to you. You dropped off as soon as I came over to you. So let me come back to you as we talk about how the farmers were trained. So the importance of grafting the cocoa plant and the importance of harvesting and processing. Tell us about the training that the farmers received. And I was also very impressed to realize that 25% of the farmers that you trained during this project were female farmers. So I think it is very important that this project is being inclusive of both the male and the female farmers in Dominica. So kind of just walk us through what was the training process. And then, you know, Gabe, I want to come over to you as we talk about the implications for a project like this, the importance of extending these best practices beyond the cocoa industry to other agricultural products in Dominica and even potentially revitalizing the banana industry. Because as we already mentioned, cocoa thrives in shade. And it is usually shaded by banana and plantain. So this may be an opportunity to revitalize banana, plantain, and the agro-processing needed to add value. So we still have quite a bit to cover on this program. So I think this is a really important conversation. But Errol, let me come over to you as we talk about the training. Once we identified the genetic fingerprints of the best cocoa for the finest cocoa productions that is in high demand right now.
Thank you again. We established the four plots, and then like you mentioned, there was another farmer who is also big in cocoa. He's a large cocoa producer. Well, he's a large farmer, period. And so we included him as a fifth demo plot. The project in itself engaged someone, and we produced, two persons, and we produced 200 grafted cocoa plants, because the tradition before was people would just
2000,
yes. 2000. The tradition before is people just take the seed and just plant. And like they say that when you plant the seed, it does not remain true to type. You have cross-pollination and so on. And so we decided that for the plants we put in on the demo plots and given the farmers to remain true to type, the technique that is available is the technique called grafting. And so we did several trainings. About 130 farmers attended, including extension staff from the Ministry of Agriculture. Also, our funding agency would also be present. Miss Esprit would always be present at our trainings. I guess she probably has interest in growing some cocoa one of these days. And so the farmers would train first in field establishment. Field establishment, you would have to select where is it overexposed to wind, is there sufficient shade, would you have to plant a shade crop prior to putting the cocoa. And so we train them on the whole establishment, the spacing based on what are the intercrops or other crops you're going to have established on that piece of lot. You would have to have appropriate spacing. So we train them on field establishment. We also train them on pruning, rehabilitation of abandoned fields, because there are a lot of cocoa farms that are on the bush. And if someone decides that they want to put adequate access to their farm and they want to rehabilitate, we also train them on what to do in terms of the rehabilitation. We train them on pre-harvest and post-harvest management, because traditionally, before, we would see people take their cocoa, they would put it on a galvanized sheet and put it outside and so on, not realizing that oxidation can take place, and the quality, the final quality is compromised. And so cocoa in itself, the bean is not supposed to come in contact with any metal. And so you use things like wood and so to do your drying, plastics, and so. So we train them in that. We also did a visit on the, at the factory of a processor, Mr. Napier, in the Kalamishi area, Point Baptist Chocolate, and where he went through the whole process and then took us into the factory where he did the willowing and all the processes. And then there was a particular chocolate I think they've enjoyed. There was a rum chocolate. Mm. I think they enjoyed.
They've been putting their business out.
So the training really exposed the farmers, and the pruning itself. We were very happy that coming out of the pruning, a young man from the Kalinago territory actually took it up as a small business. Sadly, he had to migrate, Mr. Roman Paris. But we must acknowledge him, because he stood out as one of the young men in the project who had that drive and that determination to follow up on what was taught. And so he is listening wherever he is in St. Kitts or somewhere. We just want to say good night to Mr. Paris. Mm-hmm. We also train the farmers in micropropagation of banana and plantains, because there are times you may need banana and plantains as a shade crop, but they may not be readily available. So we showed the farmer how you can take one comb of a banana or plantain and how you can do certain things, and out of that one you can get up to 20 plants from that one. So we showed them the micro propagation techniques of bananas and plantains, so they could be self-sufficient in producing their own plants as shade in the establishment of their cocoa. In terms of the training, I think that's I may have covered most of what we did.
Yes, thank you for that. So Gabriel, let me come over to you, and then we're going to take your phone calls and your comments on Facebook. The time is speeding by as always. But what are the implications for this project, Gabriel? Can we take this information and create best practices to revitalize the entire agriculture industry in Dominica?
Outstanding point, Sister Simone. We believe that if we build a cocoa industry, and we know we have some very sound ideas, again, as I said, we've been laying the foundation for 23 years. I don't want to take any credit beyond that, which brothers Dave and Errol, I mean, I remember the folks who back in 2001 were talking about this. We have then the ability as a fine flavor, and let me just have our listening audience know, International Cocoa Organization in Abidjan, Côte d'Ivoire, Ivory Coast, lists Dominica among the top 10 to 15 fine flavor countries in the world. And our percentage is 100%. So for instance, Belize, which is on the Central American Isthmus, is only 50%. Jamaica is about 90-95%. Dominica is 100% based on their assessment. What does that mean? Well, let me just tell you what the News and Medical Report, which is a link to John Hopkins here in Baltimore, which I'm sure you've heard about, says. There are a series of beneficial effects on the cardiovascular system that is associated with regular intake of cocoa containing foods and beverages. These encompass effects on blood pressure, vascular and platelet function, and insulin resistance. Now you wonder why my Pampo lives so long. Now you wonder why we have such a high percentage of centenarians. We've been drinking cocoa tea, as we like to call it, from young. It goes on to say, polyphenols, which are present in high concentrations in cocoa, in particular dark chocolate, can activate endothelial nitrogen oxide synthesis. This leads to the generation of nitrogen oxide, which lowers blood pressure by promoting vasodilation. Studies have shown improvements in pulse wave speed and sclerotic score index. Moreover, greater concentrations of plasma epipeptides and the release of endothelium-derived vasodilators increases the production and concentration of plasma proxycandiums. This leads to a greater cognitive ability and greater neural health. So it's good for heart health. It's an antioxidant. It's anti-carcinogenic. It combats diabetes. And so if we move away from a dependence on imported foods, we use more of our local cocoa, then we can see our ability rather to maintain maintain a mortality rate in the, you know, life expectancy rate rather in the 79-85 year range. Now, so this is cocoa and wellness. So just cocoa health and wellness is one industry. I've always said Dominica, like our cocoa, is high end, high value. We are not a mass market for tourism. That's for the places like the Bahamas with miles and miles of sand beaches. What we want is to see a cocoa industry that's grounded in a Dominican cocoa society. Who would belong to a cocoa society? First of all, the farmers. Secondly, our scientists. We have brilliant scientists. Unfortunately, not enough of them are home. Most of them are overseas. So we want to create that collaborative to bring them back into connectivity with national production. Students. Our students are disconnected from agriculture. You know, a lot of people want to sit in an office. I'm proud to come back home and sweat and ferment and live in synchronicity with nature. Policymakers and diaspora leaders who can then link our cocoa industry to science, research and development centers. You can have symposia, you can have exchanges. So we benefit from the linkages between our diaspora. So our diaspora is not simply asked to come home and vote. They asked to come home and partner to build our local economy. Thirdly, a cocoa festival. What that cocoa festival would do would be to expose Dominica's cocoa product to an international audience. And in that system, therefore, instead of having our commercial sector be dominated by others, you'd have Tikai Kako. So different villages would have shops, well adorned, and have a variety of cocoa-based beverages and different cocoa products. So when Dominicans visit Dominica or tourists come, they can get something that's indigenous, not some plastic toy that's made somewhere else posing as a Dominican product.
You are listening to Untapped Potential with Dr. Simone.
If you live in Canada, the US, and the UK and are looking for Dominica products, including cocoa sticks, bay rum, coffee, soaps, crafts, and other popular Dominica items, then look no further. You can now shop on buydominicaonline.com, a secure, easy-to-navigate website selling a wide variety of Dominica-made and Dominica-inspired products. When you shop on buydominicaonline.com, you are helping to grow Dominica's economy. Go to buydominicaonline.com and enjoy home away from home.
You've just been listening to the first portion of a program we did with regards to the cocoa industry in Dominica and how we can all work to achieve a better cocoa industry and the importance of elevating that industry so that so many people can benefit financially from this industry. So here we are as we continue along with the program. We want to talk about our tip of the week as we continue to try to remain consistent with those life goals, which is the premise of untapped potential. How can we remain consistent with those important goals that we have set for ourselves? And of course, it boils down to self-discipline. So our tip for this week comes from www.mindtools.com. So again, www.mindtools.com, and the name of the article is self-discipline. So it begins by saying, you can never conquer the mountain, you can only conquer yourself. This is a quote from Jim Whitaker, American mountaineer and CEO. Marion wakes up before dawn each morning to exercise. She works very efficiently in the office, ignoring distractions and devoting all of her attention to her high-value goals. In the evening, she attends a class online. She'll be graduating in a few months with her MBA. How can people like Marietta achieve so much so consistently? And how can we accomplish as much in our personal lives and careers? Part of the answer lies in self-discipline. That is what pushes us to deliver on our best intentions and goals, even when we don't feel like doing so. If we have self-discipline, we're able to put off short-term pleasure or endure short-term inconvenience or discomfort in the pursuit of a long-term goal. This is why self-discipline is so important. In this article, we'll examine what self-discipline actually is. We'll explore why it's useful. We'll explore why it's useful, and we'll look at how to develop it. What is self-discipline? Self-discipline is the ability to push yourself forward, stay motivated, and take action regardless of how you're feeling physically or emotionally. You're showing it when you intentionally choose to pursue something better for yourself, and you do it in spite of factors such as distractions, hard work, or unfavorable odds. Self-discipline is different from self-motivation or willpower. Motivation and willpower contribute to it, as do persistence, the ability to follow through on your intentions, and hard work. Why work on self-discipline? Self-discipline is useful in many areas of our life. For instance, it's what pushes you to do high-quality work even when you don't feel like it. It gives you the strength to stay professional with your clients even when you're ready to throw in the towel. It helps you to stick with achieve tough goals that you set for yourself. Self-discipline also enables you to keep going through a great success despite what others might see as insurmountable odds. So a very good article on just reminding ourselves of the importance of self-discipline. So it goes on to talk about how to develop self-discipline. So self-discipline is like a muscle. The more you work on developing it and using it, the stronger it will become. So it talks about the importance of choosing specific goals. One I really, really like, and I live my life by it, the importance of SMART goals. So if you're unfamiliar with SMART goals, they are specific, measurable, attainable, relevant, and time-bound, and break the goal down into smaller sub-goals wherever you can. Yes, so very, very good article on the importance of self-discipline. So I would encourage you to check it out at www.mindtools.com. One of the other things it talks about is identifying obstacles and how do you get around those obstacles, how to replace old habits, because I think for many of us, we get stuck in old habits, and then before we know it, the trajectory we were on in terms of pursuing our goals gets derailed because those old habits step back in and get in our way. Monitor your progress. So some really good information if you're looking to work on your self-discipline from mindtools.com. So here we are at the end of the program. It is always great to be here with you for another episode of Untapped Potential with Dr. Simone right here on TDN Radio. If this was your first time joining us, we hope that you will set your reminder to join us every Tuesday from 5:30 Eastern Standard Time on TDN Radio as we get powered up and energized for the week ahead, and we remind ourselves of those important life goals that we have set out for ourselves and what we can do to remain motivated to achieve these life goals. And as always, we have a lot going on with Untapped Potential, with Roots Connections, with Push Past 10. So for all that you need to know about this program, you can log on to pushpast10.com. So that is pushpast10.com for all the information. We are very happy our Dominique Anu, Dominica in Puzzle, the very first book of Puzzles for Dominica with in regards to our culture, our heritage, and our people is going very well. We've received some great feedback and the response has been wonderful. So if you would like more information about Dominica in Puzzle, the book, you can visit us at pushpast10.com. We are also gearing up for our Dominica Child Protection Society summer camp tour, where we will be visiting various schools, and we are grateful for Tanya Dixon and Deborah Charles Mark, who will be on the ground in Dominica too, as we continue to empower our children to speak up against abuse in Dominica. So again, thank you for being here for another episode of Untapped Potential. I look forward to being in your company next week as we continue to journey on. So until then, remember to stay strong, stay positive, stay engaged, stay active, and remember your life story is your strength. Tap into your potential every day, every week, every month, every year, and so we can continue to be consistent with those life goals that we have set out for ourselves. So until next week, you take care and you have yourself a productive week.